RV Family Travel Atlas is sponsored by Jayco. Since 1968, Jayco has been providing a way for generations of families to create lasting memories. For more information, visit your local Jayco dealer or head on over to jayco.com.
And by the Thetford Corporation, the industry expert and innovation leader, Thetford has made RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. To see a complete lineup of products, visit Thetford.com.
And by Cabela's. Cabela's has everything you need to get your family into the great outdoors. Visit Cabela's.com and make sure your next great camping trip is one for the record books.
And by Highway West Vacations. Highway West invites you to connect with family, friends, and nature as you experience the beauty and adventure found in the great American West. Visit HighwayWestVacations.com to start planning your next great trip today.
And by Outdoorsy. The largest and most trusted rental marketplace, Outdoorsy is making it safe and easy to make money renting your RV with full insurance, roadside assistance, secure payments, and real people ratings and reviews. Visit Outdoorsy.co to find a cool RV to rent or to see how much money you can earn renting your RV.
Welcome to this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we write about RV and family travel with our three boys, Theo, Max, and Wes.
You can read about our adventures at RVFamilyTravelAtlas.com, and you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
On this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas, we are talking about the pros and cons of travel blogging. Listeners are constantly asking if they should start a blog of their own, so we decided to devote a whole show to the ins and outs of documenting your RV journey.
We will share honest stories from our own blogging journey, dig down into the technical how-tos, and answer many of our listeners' questions.
You might think that starting a travel blog takes a chunk of change and a whole lot of technical know-how, but we know that RV Family Travel Atlas began with no money down and a made-to-order template. You are listening to episode number 141, To Blog or Not to Blog, The RV Traveler's Conundrum.
Before we head into this week's feature topic, to blog or not to blog, the RV Traveler's Conundrum, it's time for our RV FTA News Roundup, which is sponsored by our friends at Outdoorsy, and a big welcome on board to Outdoorsy, the newest sponsor in the RV FTA Podcast Network.
Absolutely. We're really glad to have them on board. We have talked so many times over the last few years on this show about our interest in renting out an RV as an additional source of income, and also as a way to basically pay for more camping and travel. So anytime we brought up the topic with our listeners, we realized that the most common response was, well, that sounds like a good idea, but what about, you know, A, B, C, like all of the concerns. Like, RVs are like members of the family to RV owners. And many owners felt nervous, like, about the idea that problems could happen.
I think everyone likes the idea of renting out the RV to make some extra money, but what if something goes wrong, right? And Outdoorsy's done a really great job at addressing all those concerns head on, right?
Yeah, well, they really have. And, you know, when we started talking to them about the podcast and about, you know, our listeners and what they needed to know about this company, we really wanted to invite them to communicate the difference. Like, what is the difference between your rental model and all of the other options out there? So we said, like, what's different? And they kind of gave us a bunch of things that were different.
Oh, they stepped up to the plate.
They were like,
challenge accepted.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, we got you covered. We're different. So, I mean, it turns out they actually do a lot of things differently that nobody else within that market is
doing. For me, it starts with that $1 million insurance policy that covers the owner and the renter, right? I mean, that's some serious security.
Absolutely. And we, you know, I have to be honest. I questioned the Outdoorsy folks a little bit, like, hard on
Stephanie
that insurance policy.
She peppered them with questions.
Well, you know how if you buy, like, the insurance from the car rental company or whatever, you're never quite sure, like, what the outcome is going to be. Like, if something happens, am I really going to be covered? Or are they going to say, oh, no, that's not covered and that's not covered? So let's just say that I was pretty impressed with the answers. Like, they could give me specific turnaround times on claims. And they could explain exactly how, you know, these claims worked and really how easy it was for one of their owners to be like, yeah, this got a little damaged and here's a picture of it. And, you know, here are the pictures of it before it went out. And then the turnaround time, we're talking weeks. Like, when they were giving me exact evidence of their turnaround time on claims. I was pretty impressed by that.
They also do a lot beforehand to avoid getting into a situation where somebody who's not safe is renting your RV. So they do a DMV check on all drivers. They offer 24/7 pay-as-you-go roadside assistance, and they have a dedicated customer support team to help you out if there is an issue.
So, and also 93% of their reviews, you know, from both the owners and the renters are 5-star reviews. So a lot of people that are using Outdoorsy are happy with the experience.
Yeah, and a lot of people renting their RVs are doing it again and again, and they are making money doing it. I mean, let's face it, a lot of our listeners, you know, you're doing 4 or 5 weekends a year and maybe a week or two vacation. Your RV is sitting in the driveway more than it is being used. So renting it a handful of times throughout the season could pay your payment for one thing.
It's very attractive to me. But then I also understand, like, you know, like what we said to Outdoors, like we understand that the primary concern of our, you know, listeners would be, what if something happens to my RV? So that's why we just wanted to like address that head on.
And like, I mean, Stephanie and I feel comfortable with this company and what they provide and how they take care of business. So if you're going to try renting, we would definitely recommend giving Outdoorsy a shot, and you can check them out at their website, get more information. And if you have any questions, shoot us a question too, and we can pass it on to them.
Yeah. Well, there's also a great place on their website. So outdoorsy.co. It's not .com. Don't put outdoorsy.com
outdoorsy.co
in.
Is .co. Hipper. It's cooler.
Yeah, they're hipper. So it's outdoorsy.co/list your RV with like a little dash between the words. So list-your-RV. And I'll put the link in the show notes. That is where it lists all the things that are different that we just talked about and all the things that they do to ensure that everybody has a good experience from the owner to the renter. You know, the whole process is seamless. And so, you know, we're going to talk a lot more about this company over the course of the summer through their messaging on this podcast. We'll tell you more about it. But this is, I think, the most important thing for our listeners to hear.
And we'll put that website in the show notes for you to check out and read about. And also, we interviewed Jen from Outdoorsy just about 2 years ago at this point.
Yeah, it was like episode 50-something.
Yeah, so they've been doing this for a while, and we really think they have it figured out. So if you want to make some extra cash with that RV that's just sitting out there in the driveway, check out outdoorsy.co.
Now, something else that you should check out this week is the Girl Camper podcast, because she had Mark Polk on her show talking about weight distribution hitches, and everybody could use to learn a little more information about weight distribution hitches.
I could listen to Mark and Janine talk about weight distribution hitches for like 10 hours.
They're a good combo.
And here's all the proof you need that the Girl Camper podcast is not just for the girls. She's got Mark Polk on.
Yeah.
This guy's a rock star. This guy's a stud. He's an RV safety stud. Stephanie just cringed because I said that word. Because he is. I'm sorry. And everyone needs to be.
Feel comfortable with that. Dawn, I'm sorry.
Everyone. I'm sure Dawn thinks he's an RV safety stud too. And look, it's important to know how a weight distribution hitch works and why you should have one. And he likes the equalizer. That's the only one we've used.
Yeah.
So I can't say it's the best because I haven't tried other ones. I can just say it has worked really well for us, and
well,
I really like that one.
If Mark uses it, then we feel good with it. He's a
solid
good decision maker.
Solid.
All right. So now another piece of news that you need to know is that I will be at Cabela's for their Ladies Day Out this weekend. But even I'll be at the Hamburg one, but Ladies Day Out is happening across the country at Cabela's everywhere. And that's May 13th.
Stephanie will be there Saturday.
Yes.
Okay, she'll be there Saturday, May 13th, and she's going to do the archery at 11 o'clock. Okay, don't be frightened by that, okay? She's not going to shoot the arrows at you. Okay?
I have good aim.
She has very good aim. But no, join her for the archery at 11. I mean, I think it would be pretty awesome to get some archery lessons, and frankly, I'm a little bit jealous.
And I may be there with a certain girl, another girl.
She's
camper.
Bringing girl camper, okay? Yeah. So this is like Thelma and Louise on the road here. Anything could happen.
It's really true.
Janine, Stephanie, and archery.
It's true.
Okay,
it's
what
true.
More do you need to get out to Cabela's?
We have
and
fun.
I just have to say, I love these special days that Cabela's does.
Yeah,
and
we're having fun going to
I'm having a lot of fun. I'm excited to do the family adventure days.
All right. So now that's all of the news, and we have a great episode in front of us. So let's just tell everybody how it's going to go, because this is a little bit different than a lot of our other episodes. We really like to stay on topic with RV content on this podcast. But sometimes we get enough interest from our listeners about a certain topic that we go, you know what, we have to do an episode on this. And blogging is one of the questions that comes up all of the time from listeners and readers on the blog. And they say, like, should we do a blog? It came up on our forum. And so we thought this is a good topic to do now at the beginning of the travel season, right? So right now, a lot of people haven't started their big trips. So if you want to blog about your summer travels, you want to get it going now.
I think it's very relevant to an RV owner because if you are an RV traveler, you have great opportunities for blogging. I mean, if it is something you want to do, you're traveling to beautiful places, you're having big adventures, it might be something exciting for you to add to your life.
Yeah. And we have been doing it for quite a while.
Like 7 years.
So we can kind of give you a little perspective on the pros and cons. So we're going to start out. Our first segment is pros and cons and myths. All right. And then the second segment, we're going to go into the technical stuff. We're not going to get too deep in the weeds here. It's just going to be the basics. Like, so you want to do a blog, what do you do? Right. And we've just got about 3 steps to get you started. It's really not that complicated.
And then third segment, we're going to bare our souls and answer listener questions. And they were really good. So they were thoughtful questions, and we'll give you some insight into how this has worked for us and if it might work for you.
Yep. All right.
Stay tuned. Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's time for segment one of our big episode on the pros and cons of travel blogging. But before we dive into that, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Jayco.
There's a reason J-Flight has been America's best-selling line of travel trailers for more than a decade. With family-friendly floor plans, plenty of standards and options, and Jayco's 2-year limited warranty, it gives you no worries and all of the fun. Available in 3 different models, the J-Flight SLX, J-Flight, and J-Flight Bungalow. And there's a floor plan for every camper. Visit your local Jayco dealer or jayco.com for more information. Jayco, generations of family fun.
We have a lot of friends who have bought those SLXs. They're all over the place.
I really, really like them. I think that it's such – I really do think that it's the best affordable entry-level travel trailer for a family.
Yeah, value, quality, good livability on them. I'm really surprised that the price point's really affordable.
Yep.
All right, let's dive into the pros and cons of travel blogging. And boy, has this one been a long time in the works for us. And let's just state outright – Stephanie and I do travel blogging, we do podcasting, we do freelance writing, and we've written books. We're really trying to focus on the blogging aspect of this. I mean, we'll probably have to end up talking about...
In this episode, you mean.
In this episode.
Yeah.
We'll talk about the podcasting aspect a little bit as it relates to the blogging, but we want to stay focused on the blogging.
Yeah, and some people ask us questions that were podcast related, and we're just not going to get into that on this episode. So maybe in the future at some point
we would talk about a whole different world.
But that is a very different
world. So let's start with some of the pros of travel blogging, and then we'll do the cons and the myths. And look, it depends on the person. There are positives and negatives. Let's walk through some of them.
All right. So the first pro about doing a travel blog is fairly obvious, but it's also the most important item on the table. It's that you get a fantastic record of your RV journey. You know, when you're there doing something, it may seem like you'll never forget it, but it is amazing the way that I can look back at our blog and go, oh, I forgot about that.
At this point, I think we have like well over 500 blog posts. We might have like 600 or 700. Yeah. And I dip back through the blog at times, and I do forget about certain trips. And it does bring it rushing back to life for me, and it is wonderful that way. And ever since we've started, I always thought that one day when the boys are older, they will really love to go back and read this, and I hope that's not
a pipe dream.
I hope they won't like squash me on that, but I can see maybe when they're 18, 19, 20, or maybe when they're older and their parents, they will look back and read through that and go, oh my God, look at all these amazing things that we did.
Oh, absolutely. And I love the fact that since everything is so digital with social media, like a lot of us don't have those photo albums in our house. I remember as a child flipping through those photo albums and everything that had the pockets that the photos went in. And I'm thinking, you know, like our kids don't have a lot of that around. We try to do more of that now. But I love the idea that years from now, once they're more savvy on the internet, they can kind of flip through the blog that way. And I'll be honest, I think that they will.
My father used to do like the Kodak slideshows. And a lot of people from our generation probably did have those as kids. I mean, that didn't have the stories or the words to go with it. But I did enjoy seeing all those photos, and mm-hmm. it brings the memories back to life.
I really think that it's a priceless treasure that we've managed to sort of compile over the course of time.
Yeah.
Perhaps it should be curated. Sometimes I want to go back and delete a bunch of
stuff. Oh, absolutely.
But right,
so the second pro, and it's really two things at once. You get to practice writing and practice photography. And for both of us, that's been a wonderful part of this journey. I mean, I really feel like we've both improved as writers. So this is over 7 years for us. And we've both improved our photography. And I've, you know, paid particular attention to taking lessons and really trying to make my photography good. Partly because when we started, I hated my photographs. I would do a blog post and I'd be like, oh my God, I really didn't capture the trip the way I wanted to capture it. So I've honed both of those skills, and I know you have too.
Yeah, you always love to point out like your garbage cans and early photos.
Yeah. I just didn't frame the photos at all. I mean, I look back, but I've improved at both of those things. So I think that needs to be part of your consideration. Do you want to become a better writer? Do you want to become a better photographer? And blogging's a great way to practice those skills.
All right. And also, this piggybacks on that too. I think that a blog really encourages reflection, right? Like, we are such a busy culture now. We just like move from things. Boom, boom, boom. And I love the fact that writing a blog, if you write a good blog, that's not just like we woke up in the morning and we went here and then we went there. But if you try...
Stephanie calls those breakfast to bed stories.
Every elementary school
and she hates them.
Does. So, but if you do it right and you try to find the story in the story, right? And you try to like think about why did this mean something to me? What was at the root of this, you know, being a compelling activity for our family or a good thing to do? Like, if you really want to get to a good story, then you end up thinking about something more. So I really found that I am thinking and I'm thoughtful and reflective about things that maybe if I weren't writing for it, I just move on.
Well, you just gave a great tip. You know, if you want your blog to be compelling, you want a big takeaway, an emotional takeaway, a spiritual takeaway, a family takeaway, whatever it is. If it literally is just a list of events and places that you went and times that you went there, I don't know that other people are going to really want to read it. And when you go back to read it, it might be a little dull too.
Well, that's so, like those slideshows that people used to click through. And then
well,
we went
saying,
to
like
the Louvre.
Like my father, right?
Yeah, and you're like, oh.
So, yeah, you want to look for like, what is the meaning of life?
Yeah.
Is the meaning of this camping trip?
Every moment is an opportunity to reflect on that. So,
What are we learning for us? What were we learning as a family? Yeah. What are we learning about this child or that child or about each other as a couple? And not so much that breakfast to bed narrative or that list of places. That's not that compelling to us.
Yes. So another thing that I like about it is that it really taps into that age-old tradition of the travelogue. Like, this is what people used to do. When they traveled all over the world, they would just keep these journals as they traveled. And like, so now in literature, we actually have some of those, right? Some are fictionalized, like Robinson Crusoe and everything, but that comes from that great tradition of travelogue. And I thought, well, that doesn't really exist anymore, but it's nice that in these blogs, I feel like it's journaling. Like people are journaling.
And when I look at it as journaling, which I do a lot, you're right. It helps me focus and pay attention to details. You know, so when we're in a place like Charleston, I want to remember the names of the food, the names of the restaurant, the name of the bookstore, the coffee, and those details bring the place back to life for me later when they're in my writing. So when I know I'm going to be writing a travelogue or taking pictures, I get more focused and my eyes become more wide open to the experiences around me.
Yeah, and you can't remember the name of all of those things if you are just taking pictures and Instagramming. Because if you like Instagram a photo for every single thing you do in a day, like people are going to block you.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, you need to become a transparent eyeball, which is what
oh,
I do.
Geez.
Just kidding. I do think that there is this quality to the blogger and the travel writer where they're really drinking in the experience because they know they're going to write about it. They know they're going to take pictures.
Yeah, that becomes habitual. That's the interesting part. All right. So now another thing that's nice about it is it does create community. We've seen this in our own life, even prior to us doing a podcast and really gaining like a bit of a larger audience. You know, we've seen this with other bloggers too. There is a connection. People chat with each other. They say, oh, I read this. I like that. And it is a bigger community.
For a lot of travel writers or travel bloggers, your initial audience is going to be other travel writers and other travel bloggers. And that's just the way it is. And that's perfectly fine. And you do create connections and make friends that way and get encouragement that way.
Sure. But they're like-minded people. I mean, think about the wonderful correspondence that we have on our show that we just love, because these are people that enjoy doing the same things that we enjoy doing.
Right. So we enjoy them. You know, yeah. We enjoy reading them and listening to them. Right. Yeah. So definitely can create a strong community. Absolutely. And also, travel blogging is a great way to crowdsource material. Like, we know a lot of people that when they are traveling to a destination, whether it's New Orleans or Boston or New York City or San Francisco, they want to go to their favorite travel bloggers and read what they have written about those places more than they might want to go to Travel and Leisure or a Fodor's or a Frommer's.
Yeah, and studies really back this up, right? So these companies that ask people, like, where do you get your information? People tend to want to get their information from other people that they trust, that have, like, some sort of relationship with them, even if that's, like, a digital relationship. People want to hear that instead of getting it from Yelp. You know, like, although Yelp is helpful or TripAdvisor is helpful,
you don't know those people writing those reviews. Are they crazy? You know, did they really have an awful, you know, worst meal they've ever had in their lives? Are they exaggerating? Or if it's a blogger that you sort of know and trust and they say, hey, I love this restaurant, well, then you're thinking, I'd love it too. And one of the things I love the most about what we've created is that people do tap into us as crowdsourced material. And then we definitely do the same with other travel writers, other RV bloggers. Mm-hmm. I love seeing other writers that I like and what they think of certain places.
Yeah. And we've done that with Campground of the Week. We've done the podcast form of that, you know, where we were like, well, we can't be everywhere. So we can't give you all these recommendations, but we know great people that can, you know, so you can tap into those people that do this and create this content in other places.
Yeah. And I used to be a big purchaser of the Fodor's, Frommer's, Moon Guides. And now I think I am more likely to just go to 10 or 12 different blogs and see what people have thought about those areas.
Yeah. So that's our list of pros. So
and we'll get into a lot more pros when we answer reader questions. And we'll get into more cons when we answer reader questions.
More personal.
This is just things for you to think about as you're deciding if you want to do a travel blog or not.
All right. So let's move into the cons. Okay. So number one, and this falls, I'm going to say this one because it falls more on my shoulders. And
absolutely.
So it is platform management. All right. So no matter what, if you have a website, you are going to end up spending time managing that website. That can be in the form of updates. That can be in the form of spam management, of all that stuff. So it's just gonna take time. Now, that doesn't have to be a negative thing if you enjoy that, but you need to think very carefully.
Who enjoys spam management?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a back end work element to running a blog. And we'll talk in a second about using other, you know, other tools. But if you're going to run a WordPress site, it does become work very quickly.
Yeah.
And the more you produce and the more you're using it, the more work you're going to have. And a lot of bloggers don't realize that when they get into it. And I think that's a reason why a lot of travel bloggers stop, is because they realize, oh, I don't want to manage this website. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to have to do that. I just want to write.
Yeah. Well, and I totally get that. That's why it's in our cons column. Okay. So another con, the focus on Wi-Fi while traveling. Now, there are a bunch of people out there that dedicate a lot of time to figuring it out how to get the best Wi-Fi at the campground. We don't actually care that much.
Yeah, it's like if the Wi-Fi doesn't work, it's almost like a blessing. It's like, okay, fine. We'll just go sit outside around the campfire.
The only reason we have to care is when we actually have work to do.
When we have deadlines, when we're blogging for other people, which we'll talk more about when we answer reader questions.
Or we have to do our podcast.
But the Wi-Fi thing is one of the big stressors, because personally for me, I do like to write a blog post right after I've experienced whatever the thing is. So if we go on some great kayak tour, I do want to write the blog post that night back at the campground. I've always been more than willing to skip the campfire, head into the RV and work at the campground. And I enjoy that, frankly, but I stop enjoying it very quickly if pictures are taking forever to upload.
Right. So you end up, so what we've ended up doing in the past is stopping like the campground stress. And then we're like, we upload it at a Starbucks or some other place that has Wi-Fi at some point. But again, if you want to worry about getting blogs up while you travel, you have to be willing to deal with Wi-Fi issues. And quite frankly, we try to minimize that at the most. I mean, we will talk about that more later on in this episode, but really most of our development as a business over the last couple of years has been figuring out how to not have to be connected while traveling.
Yeah, to do more of the work in advance or after the fact.
Yeah.
And just in general, the next con is that managing the photos and getting photos into any of the platforms we've used, whether it's Blogger or WordPress or whatever, it's a pain in the neck. And I like a blog post that's got 8 or 10 or 12 photos. That's the kind I like to write. Those are the kinds that I like to read. That can all of a sudden be hours of frustrating work getting all those pictures in. Where if you just use social media tools and are willing to just use one picture, and some of the social media platforms allow you to use more than one, that can be very simple, a very clean process. When you're blogging, it can become very complicated very quickly.
Right, because it's not just about using your iPhone. Like you have your DSLR and you can actually have that little Wi-Fi device. So like even if you take pictures on your real camera, we can seamlessly shoot them from your camera to a phone and get it up on social media. So that process has really been streamlined. There is not a streamlined process for getting those photos then, upload it to your blog, and then position correctly in a blog post.
I remember sitting there praying, like, please let this photo go through, right? This last photo. And of course, look, when it's for your own blog, the pressure is not there unless you pressure yourself. The second you start blogging for other people and there are deadlines involved, it can become very, very stressful dealing with getting the post up. And sometimes, you know, on our trips, we've ended up at Starbucks.
Yeah,
we've ended up at places like that just to get the Wi-Fi. And then all of a sudden it is annoying. Like, oh, we're in Myrtle Beach and I'd rather be sitting on the beach, but we're like sitting here at Starbucks because we've got to get this blog post up.
Exactly. So, you know, you just need to make a decision about whether you're even ever going to want to think about that Wi-Fi while you're traveling. Now, another thing you might want to think about is, you know, are you into linking everything on social media? Because if you create a blog and you don't do a Facebook page and an Instagram account and a Pinterest page, you know, it's okay that nobody's going to find your blog. But just so you know, nobody's going to find your blog.
Yeah. And that's so true. I mean, we did not do social media for like – we blogged for 3 years with no social media.
We didn't even have personal Facebook accounts.
Because we were teachers. We were afraid of social media. We thought our students would find it and create problems. There was a whole bunch of reasons that ended up really not being that valid. But, you know, we could only build our audience so far not using social media, you know, and the second we started to use social media, it was a game changer for us as bloggers. But, you know, you might be willing to blog and not care about an audience. And I think that's actually a wonderful thing. If it's more about creating a family record, creating a travelogue, then who cares about linking up to all these places? But you might say, Stephanie, that even friends and family are going to want you to announce your blog post on
Facebook.
That's
what happened to us. Even before we were doing this, it's for anybody but our friends and family. We had all of our friends were on Facebook and we weren't on Facebook. We were those people. And they would say, like, why can't you post it on Facebook when you have a new post up? Like, I don't want to sign up for emails, blah, blah, blah. You know, because that is how people exist. They exist in their Facebook feed and they want whatever they want to see to pop up in their Facebook feed. So, you know, that's just the reality of it, you know? And that's, again, if you don't care about that, that's fine. But just know that social media can be like, it can be that extra step that you don't think about ahead of time.
Or if you already have a lot of people on Facebook, your friends, your family, people that might be interested in reading about your travels, it's a great way to let 400 or 500 mm-hmm. people know, you know, very quickly and at a very low cost or no cost really, hey, I got a blog post out there, right? So it's a powerful tool, but it can feel like you're chained to it at times.
Yeah. So now the last con that we have is the con about pressure. Okay, so we just said, you may not care about your audience, blah, blah, blah. But what we have seen, because we talk to many bloggers, and like we meet bloggers all over the place, we interact with them as just part of what we do as a business. And what we have found is that there are so many bloggers who really feel pressured and stressed to create content. Like, it's not something that they necessarily enjoy. It's like, I got to get the next blog post up, you know?
Or it drags on for months after they get home from a trip.
Yeah, and they
feel like, oh,
it's like that high school paper like right. we have to do. And it's that that's
doctoral
not fun.
Thesis.
Yeah.
Yeah. If that's going to make you miserable, I might really consider staying away from it. I mean, you and I both love the writing. We love the photography. It can definitely be work at times, but we don't make ourselves miserable about it almost ever. I mean, a deadline's a deadline, and a deadline can be stressful. But we meet our deadlines, you know, we get it done.
But we don't have deadlines for our blog. Like those deadlines are for our freelance work, right. you know, and everything. So that's different. Like we're, you know, a blog is, it's on you to get that up and whether you're going to get
and
it.
And not having deadlines can be a big relief, but then maybe you just don't get the stuff up.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, when we started our blog and we were blogging for 3 or 4 years with really, you know, no thought of monetizing it or making it a business, we would occasionally practically shut down the blog. I mean, we would go for the winter months
mm-hmm.
and not do a post for 4 months, 5 months. And even occasionally in the summer, we'd just get busy and we wouldn't blog for 6 weeks. And we didn't have the pressure. We didn't have to do it.
No,
but then we always, because we loved it,
right.
we always did come back to it.
Because it was a creative outlet. Nobody's making you paint. Nobody's making you knit. You know, you think about these things. Are they enjoyable and are they creative outlets? And for us and for many people out there, blogging might be a creative outlet, a way to process their writing or their travels. But if it's not, if it's pressure for you or if you feel pressure to build an audience, like, oh, I hate to blog and not have people read it. You know, you might want to think about other ways that you can do that so that you don't end up being stressed.
And, you know, and I have to say, too, you might not know the answers to these questions unless you just start blogging.
Yeah.
You know, give it a shot. This season and just learn something about yourself. Like, did this make me happy and satisfied and creative, or did this make me stressed out and frustrated about Wi-Fi and just not getting the posts together? Do it for 6 months and then make a decision about whether you're a blogger or not.
All right. Now let's move on to myths, right? So we wanted to address some myths that we know are out there about blogging and just kind of like throw them out there on the table. So myth number one, people make a lot of money on their blogs. Well, some people do.
Some people make a lot of money having a hit record or getting into a movie.
Here's the reality. Very, very few people make money on blogs. Go ahead. If you think you're going to make money putting Google ads or whatever on your blog, go ahead and you research like the
actual
pennies,
rates. I mean,
the
it's
rates
peanuts.
Of click-throughs and
everything. And that's not to be discouraging because, you know, for us, our blog has led us to a lot of success and to a lot of monetizable projects, but they were never the blog mm-hmm. for us. So the blog was never the thing to generate income. We never really even had those hopes and it's never materialized, but it has led to lots of other opportunities.
Right.
So I would certainly look at it more as a way to get to other opportunities than as the grand opportunity
right.
itself.
Because people do it, but if you're going to do it, you're not going to treat this as a, if you really want to make money on your blog, then this can't be the, you know, the so-and-so family travels around in their RV blog. It has to have something else that generates much more traffic to your website and that it becomes more compelling.
Look, we did blog to book contract. I mean, but that's a rare number of people. And we never would have received a book contract or been offered a book contract without the blog,
mm-hmm.
right? So those stories definitely happen. But I would really, really discourage you to start blogging with the hope of making money on your blog. Because I really do feel like you'll disappoint yourself.
All right. So myth number two, bloggers get a lot of free stuff.
Bloggers probably don't get a lot of free stuff. People with large social media followings get a lot of free stuff. You know, so if you've got 100,000 followers on Instagram and you don't have a blog, you get a lot of free stuff. You know, if you have 500 followers on Instagram and an amazing, well-written blog and great photos, you probably ain't getting nothing.
No, because what they want, what these companies do not want a really great review written about their product. What they want
They're not looking for Shakespeare.
No.
They're not. They'd go to the university and say, here's some free gum. Can
like
you write about it?
Yeah, you're like, but I'm the best review writer
They'd go to an MFA program and be like, here's some new sneakers, you know, but that's not the game.
No, what they want is product placement in front of a lot of eyeballs. So it really is about the numbers and about the audience. So until you build that, and we just talked about the stress that can come along with that, you know, you're not going to be getting like tons of free stuff in the mail.
And building that social media audience that connects to your blog, you know, it's frankly sweat, blood, and tears. It's a lot of work. It's consistent posting, quality posting over a long period of time and a lot of networking, unless you're like, you know, drop dead gorgeous or something, or you're climbing mountains.
We didn't have our looks to fall back on.
You know, look, there are other reasons, obviously, why people get large social media followings. But talented people in the world of travel blogging who get large social media followings tend to like be really good photographers or really good writers or just quirky and creative people. So you need those social media numbers. It's sort of sad but true. And we say all the time, like we read some blogs that we think are awful, but then those people have huge social media audiences and they get free trips or free products. And then there's blogs that are wonderful and the photography is good and the writing is good. And those people are not really engaging with businesses at all.
Yeah. So myth number three is that bloggers get to travel for free. Okay. So here's the deal.
So very few.
So here's the deal. And I'm going to actually give a number on this. That's fairly like standard out there. It's not a hard and fast rule, but just to give you an idea. You know, most people that are traveling for free are working with what are called CVBs, and those are the visitor bureaus of
convention and visitors bureaus
of different places. So these are they're the organizations that local businesses pay into. So everybody like pays into the pot, and then these organizations help bring publicity to their location. So they're charged with getting the word out about why this place is so awesome. So all they care about, again, is numbers. Many of them have hard and fast numbers that they're looking at.
You can't think like, I'm going to pitch a CVB and tell them about my cool blog. You know, everybody's – so many people have blogs. You need to pitch them and show them numbers.
Yeah.
I have 10,000 on Instagram. I've got 20,000 on Facebook, whatever those numbers are. And what you get is based on those numbers. They're looking at a chart.
They're like, oh,
they have 50,000 people here, so we can give them this much support. Oh, this person has 1 million followers. Well, we'll pay the whole trip and write them a check.
Yeah.
It's a numbers game, and it's like it's business.
So some travel bloggers will say, hey, you know, you need about 1,000 hits a day on your website.
At the minimum,
to start being interesting to people in terms of getting that. So, and that might not sound like a huge number. It's not a huge number, but believe me, you have a lot of competition. There's a lot of, you know, things out there. So it is.
Well, and 1,000 a day means you're posting regularly.
Right.
You're not going to post once a week and get 1,000 a day.
It's not that nobody travels for free, gets free stuff, and makes money off of their blog. It's just that those people are really treating their blogs like full-time jobs. They really are.
Yeah, and just to, you know, personalize it at least for a second, because people are probably interested, you know, do Stephanie and Jeremy travel for free? Yeah, we do. For the most part. But there's a whole ecosystem at work that goes beyond blogging. There's blogging, there's podcasting, there's magazine articles, there's the possibility that these people we work with could be in our books. We've created this whole world of possibilities in terms of how we promote regions, and that together might add up to a free trip. But it's certainly not based on just blogging.
Yeah, we don't have people like how much of a check do I have to write you to get you to come to this place?
I mean, you know, we're offering a whole lot of opportunities for publicity for a region when we get a free trip or we get travel expenses paid or whatever it is. And it was built up over 7 years, right?
Yeah. So those are a list of pros and cons and myths. Now we want to give you a super easy, you know, technical know-how lesson. If you are interested after hearing that,
I think plenty of people are. And I would stick to the point, like, if you're not sure, try it. I don't know. That's been my operating theory in life. I mean, if you're not positive, give it a whirl and then decide, right? Don't decide before you've tried it.
All right. So we will be back in a minute to talk about the technical nitty-gritty and know-how. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's time for segment two on technical nitty gritty and know-how. It's our big episode on the pros and cons of travel blogging. But before we dive in, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Highway West Vacations. And Stephanie, take me there now.
I wish we were flying out there right now. Highway West Vacations offers luxury accommodations throughout the Western United States. You can stay in your own RV or tent, or you can rent a vintage trailer, Airstream, cabin, or cottage. Each resort offers unique spaces and stylish accommodations located in dreamy destinations in Utah, California, Washington, and Oregon. Come explore the great outdoors and experience a new way of vacationing as you travel the Highway West. Visit highwaywestvacations.com to start planning today.
Now, if you want to be a travel blogger, it sounds like you need a domain name.
Right. Okay. So this, we're just going to go through what you're going to do right now if you want to be, or you want to test out being a travel blogger. Okay. So the very first thing that you have to do is get a domain name. These are not expensive. You can get a domain name for $15 for the year. If you want to buy it for more than 1 year, you can probably get a cheaper price than that if you find, you know, a deal running somewhere. Now, I would caution you, do not run out and get a domain name before checking to see if all of the social media handles are available.
Big important tip. Everybody stop the podcast and write that down.
Don't
get the domain name and then be heartbroken when you can't get it on Instagram. And look, it's hard to get a name across all of those platforms. I mean, we certainly know people that have struggled with that.
But you have to do it because people can't find you, it drives people, like they hate it. Like people want to be able to find you. It drives me crazy if I can't find someone on Instagram based on their regular.
And look, if there's a name you want and somebody has it, you know, just move on, right?
Yeah,
I mean, like
it.
Don't spend $5,000 on a domain name. I don't recommend it.
No, don't pay for it. Just move on. You'll find something that hasn't been bought. Okay. So there, we have GoDaddy just because I always use that. I used it with an organization that I was involved in ahead before this. So it was just an easy business for me to work with. And I've always had very good customer service with them. But buying a domain does not give you anything except the domain name. Don't think that by buying the domain, you're buying quote unquote a website. You're not. You're just getting the rights to that name. And then you're going to have to do something with it. All right. Now, if you don't want to buy the domain name, you can, there are free options for this. You can use platforms like Blogger, Squarespace, Weebly, and WordPress. And what you can do is do one of those URLs that has your name dot WordPress.com or your name.squarespace.com.
My recommendation on this, and I think Stephanie agrees, is that if you're not really interested in professionalizing it or monetizing it down the road, it really just is something you're doing for joy and for fun. Use one of those services.
Yes,
don't enter into the world of paying money and building a WordPress site. You know, use one of those ready-made platforms that are simple and straightforward and easy to manage. Once you get into building and operating and owning your own website, there is much work involved.
Well,
right?
Yeah, it's just regularly occurring fees. Where if you don't, if you really know that this is just going to be my hobby and this is going to be like a creative outlet, we were livelittlecampers.blogspot.com. For years. So that's okay. And I would highly recommend that. It's no money. You just go to that platform and you type in the URL that you want and you see if it's
available.
And
you could be blogging in a couple hours. You just poke around a little bit. You learn the site and you have a blog post up that night.
Absolutely. However, if you think that you may want to professionalize or monetize your site ever in the future, then you do need to avoid what we had to do, which was transfer over.
Big pain in the neck.
Right.
Go right to WordPress, get a domain name, build your own website.
Go right to GoDaddy.
So Stephanie, yeah. I'm revealing how much Stephanie does here.
You have to go somewhere to buy the domain
name. But no, move towards WordPress mm-hmm. and a website that you're designing that suits the needs of your business, because you're not going to be able to monetize your blog later.
No, that's not going to look serious.
I think that's going to happen.
It's a hobby name and it's going to look like that. So first things first, buy the domain name. Now you have to buy hosting, because like I said, the domain name isn't anything. It's just a name. You have to pay a company to host your website. They take care of all of the bandwidth. Everything on the back end of things is your hosting company. Now, again, I go through GoDaddy because it's seamless for me. I have my URLs there. I have my domain names there. I have my hosting there. I use Managed WordPress, which I pay a little bit more for, but the reason why I do that is because they do all the automatic backups of my database and everything, and I need that because, honestly, the technical side of things, like, it gets me down,
Well, to give an example of, like, our trajectory and how this has worked, you know, now that this has become a you know, full-time business in our family and a serious family business, you know, we're now paying thousands of dollars to have a professional redesign our WordPress site and manage our WordPress site. And so that's why
– that's in the works and it's beautiful.
Oh, just my wait. God. It's going to be gorgeous. But if you're thinking, I want a professional blog, I want a monetized blog, I mean, somewhere down the road, you will probably come to the point where we are at where you say – I can't do all this. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do all this. I need a professional to do all this, and it will cost you money.
I'm a writer.
And you need to be generating some money probably to pay for that type of thing. So, you know, that's where we're at with it, and that's the road we've gone down.
You can also get hosting from Bluehost is a popular one, HostGator. But again, if you go in the direction with a place like Squarespace or Weebly or Blogger, you don't have to worry about hosting fees. The URL, the domain name, and the hosting is all built into that platform. They keep it super simple. So like that's the way to go if you don't want to deal with any of the technical stuff.
And I want to reemphasize something that we said very quickly in a previous segment. You can ditch all of this stuff and use social media platforms. You're just not going to have the same powerful tools at your disposal to do multi-picture posts with beautiful text. There are people out there that are not blogging at all. They're just doing all of this as Instagrammers.
Yeah, or
and
Facebook.
And they're working with CVBs, mm-hmm. and they're making money. I think it's even really more so Instagram than Facebook now, right? I mean, there are like professional Instagrammers. Now the social media environments can change. In 5 years, Instagram might not be the hot platform that it is right now. And you're at the whim and fancy of the people from Instagram and Facebook as they change the rules of those platforms and maybe in ways that you don't like. Where if it's a WordPress site, you own it, you control it.
Yeah. Okay.
It is your content.
Yeah.
But just look, if some of this sounds overwhelming, but you want to share your photos and share your experiences, the social media tools allow you to do quite a lot.
All right. So that's domain name and hosting. And now the third and final piece of the puzzle here is your content management system. So that is WordPress. Okay. So I have my domain name bought through GoDaddy and I repay that every single year. And then I have my hosting with GoDaddy, and that's a managed WordPress hosting package that I buy from them. But then I actually use the WordPress content management system. Now, the good news about this is that WordPress is free. It is an open source platform, so anybody can get it.
But then you are programming.
You're not programming.
Okay. At a basic level,
so here's the thing. What you do with WordPress is you pick a theme, and that's the way that your website looks. And I would highly recommend doing what we did not do, which you just need to go with one of the WordPress themes. Like it'll be like WordPress 2011, WordPress 2012. It is the basic theme, and that is the best supported theme. There's not going to be funny business going on with it. They're going to keep it updated. Just do that. There's a saying that my father used to say about contractors or homeowners. And he used to say they know just enough to get into trouble, right? Whenever he would go into a house that had been like messed up in any way with plumbing or.
So it's such a good analogy. Though,
I knew just
yeah,
enough
I mean,
to get
you
into
would
trouble.
Go in and you'd want some specific thing and you'd kind of get there, but then you'd like create a problem while you were getting there.
Right. So here is what I learned over the course of years. Keep it simple, right? Pick one of the basic themes. That's going to be your best friend. Keep it light. Do not go adding a million plugins because I saw this interactive map
on this other website.
The
plugins
cool.
are, and I was often the one saying, like, oh, look, I want that plugin. I want that. And then it clutters it up. It does.
Right. Well, it weighs it down and it increases load time. And people,
our website got really slow. And that was a big push for us in this redesign was to get that load time a lot faster.
And also keep it mobile friendly. Almost everybody will be reading your blog from their device. It doesn't matter how pretty it looks on the computer, on the desktop.
That was hard for me to get over too, just realizing like people are reading from their phones and that fact might compromise the way it looks on a desktop, but who cares? You've got to make it look good where people are reading it, and it's going mobile, mobile, mobile.
All right. So those are the three things you need to do. You need to go get your domain name. You need to get your hosting. And then you need to get your content management system, which might be WordPress. Or if you're in a Squarespace environment or Weebly or Blogger or something like that, they're going to take care of all that for you. All you have to do is go to their website and they're going to make it like magic, which is a good recommendation if you just want to do this for a hobby.
And if I was doing it for a hobby, that's what I would do. Mm-hmm. If I wanted to do it professionally, I would be taking the other path of the WordPress.
Go to GoDaddy, yeah. Get Managed WordPress, and get your WordPress theme up and running.
I'm excited to come back in a second and take a whole bunch of questions from our listeners about this whole crazy RVFTA blogging thing that we do. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the show, everybody. It's time for segment three of our big episode, To Blog or Not to Blog. And this is going to be questions from our listeners. And our listeners are smart, so they ask good questions. This is going to be a great segment. But first, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Thetford.
Thetford is the industry expert and innovation leader, and they have been making RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. If you are determined to keep those tanks fresh and odor-free this camping season, check out their full lineup of holding tank deodorants, including Aquachem Liquid, Tossins, or the newest Shots.
And we have a hot new boomerang up on our Instagram and Facebook pages using the Shots.
Oh my god.
And you can see, like, I kind of would like to become a hand model, and I think that maybe I have potential.
All right, we'll keep practicing on that. They also have maintenance products for keeping your gray tank clean, your drain valve lubricated, and your freshwater tank sanitized.
How do you practice becoming a hand model? Just keep dropping the Shots into the tank.
Basically, everything that you don't want to worry about, Thetford is worrying about for you. So you can visit Thetford.com and see a complete lineup of products.
I love that line.
Do you?
Let Thetford just worry about this stuff, and we just get to travel and have fun.
Yeah, I think that that's what Thetford does, right?
Do you know what I love about working with Thetford? And I really mean this from the heart. We used all their stuff before they came on board as a sponsor.
Yeah.
So it's like we've always used their cleaning products.
And now we just get to do
toilets.
Little boomerangs of their products.
Check it out online. Yeah. Okay, let's dive into listener questions. Why don't we start with April, who asked, does it ever feel like a job, or do you enjoy every aspect of travel blogging? Great question, April. Stephanie, what do you think? And then I'll respond.
Well, I thought that, no, we never get tired of content gathering. Like, we truly enjoy traveling and looking at travel as like, oh, are we going to recommend this? Is this something that we would tell somebody else to do? We love that. But work is work. I don't care what people say about, oh, do a job you love and you'll never work a day in your life. I think that that's nonsense, because I really relate to the Dorothy Parker quote that says, like, I hate writing, but I love having written. And that is definitely for me. If I have a deadline staring me in the face, I feel pain. I feel torture, the writing process. And then afterwards I'm like, that was so wonderful. And well, I love this article. And
so you just hit on the only stress point for me. Deadlines, because we're blogging for so many other people, and we often just, like, the article has to get done. The photos have to get organized. And at that point, it is work. But the whole process of traveling with an assignment and getting paid to write, it's a dream come true for me. I absolutely love it. It makes me more excited for a trip when we have an assignment attached, when we have a blogging assignment for GoRVing or KOA, or if we're doing print stuff, okay, which is deviating from this whole blogging thing. So I love it. And like I said in one of the earlier segments, I'm a better traveler when I know I'm going to write about it and when I'm taking pictures about it. I'm paying more attention. I'm soaking in the sights, the sounds, the smells, the atmosphere of a place even more so.
All right. Now, Kelly wants to know, I would be interested in how to get started and how you gain followers. Well, of course, we just gave a lot of tips for getting started.
Don't pay for them, Kelly.
But yeah. So but what I would say, Kelly, is really have a body of work before you start trying to drum up followers. So what I notice is that people go out there and they put one blog post up on their new blog, and then they start going around and spamming Facebook groups and like, hey, look at my blog. Well, if somebody goes over and you have one post up, and I mean, there's not a lot of, like, they can't really connect with you. It's not like they're like, oh, let me read this. Like, I really recommend doing the hard work to get a lot of good content on your blog before trying to gain an audience.
This might sound obnoxious. Maybe the best way to gain an audience is to not worry about gaining an audience, is just to kind of joyfully create content, take great pictures, write great blog posts, and keep putting them out there into the universe, and people will eventually come and follow. That's one way of looking at it. a lot of people also trade likes with other people. Mm-hmm. You go and follow somebody else on Instagram. I hope they follow you back. And you do whatever you have to do to get started, to get that first 500 or 1,000 people. But at the end of the day for us, you know, we're like approaching 15,000 people on Instagram, which is great for us. I'm very happy with it. We've been posting consistently for years now, and I would like to think that the posts are engaging, they're entertaining, and the photography is good. So you just have to bring quality over a long period of time. I don't think it happens overnight for the vast majority of people that have a social media or blog following.
All right, Gail says, I would like to know if being a travel blogger alters your family travel plans. For example, do you explore areas or do activities strictly so that you can write or talk about it, or do you do what you would typically do as a family regardless of whether you're going to write and talk about this? I thought this was such a good question because you know what? There's two answers to this. If we are doing our blog content and our podcast content, the answer is absolutely yes. We basically do exactly what we would always do as travelers.
For our own platforms, our own blog posts, our own podcasts. Yeah, we're just doing what we're doing.
Yeah. So, but our freelance has picked up a lot over the course of the last 2 years, our freelance workload. So what happens though is if you're going for an article for somebody else, that's not necessarily the case. Like we might be writing an article that's not necessarily kid-centric or that's not necessarily outdoorsy-centric. So we really have to do a lot more.
Well, we need to pack in more activities because the person reading that blog post might not be interested in things that are good for 8-year-olds. They might be interested in things that are good for older kids. So we need to present a wide variety of activities in a certain area, particularly if we're writing for good old-fashioned magazines. I mean, we need to hit a lot of stuff. We do need to pack it in there. Now, that doesn't stress us out. I love it.
Yeah, I think that we've hit the point sometimes where we're like, okay, no, we can't do another restaurant. Like, we wanted to get a couple more restaurants in because we were writing an article, but, like, ultimately, our family choice is to eat dinner at the campground. So I do think that we do have to make choices like that all the time.
And there are times when there is an assignment involved and when we're working with a CVB, the Convention and Visitors Bureau, where we are doing more because we're getting to do it for free, to be honest. So we might actually do an extra activity in the afternoon because we want to write about it and we're not paying the ticket price for it that we would normally pay.
Right.
You know, we would never pay for like 2 ticket prices for something in Myrtle Beach
in one day. Right.
If we're doing a travel article or a blog post and we're working with companies or CVBs, we certainly might do more than we would normally do.
All right. So Heather wants to know, what does your schedule look like and how do you keep the work-life balance when you can't leave the work at work since it's not a location-based job? Well, I don't know if we have achieved work-life balance.
Well, we haven't. I mean, Stephanie quit her teaching job. I've scaled back on my teaching job and my responsibilities at work. We work at night and Stephanie's often working at midnight. You know, I mean, she's often working late. So a lot of work goes into it. And I think that, you know, that's the next goal for us
That. Like we've definitely, like last year we were like, we're not trying to blog from the road. And we didn't last summer. We just did mostly social media. Then this summer we're like, we are not podcasting at night from the road. Like we are building out our schedule.
We did that for several summers. We put the boys to bed and we're recording the podcast in the RV at 9:30 at night in our bedroom. And now, we're not doing that anymore.
Yeah. So it's always a work in progress and we're making changes like that. Like what we've done is identify the stress points and said, okay, how can we eliminate that?
And it's to make the travel a more pure experience, though. We're cleaning up the travel part of it, right? I mean, a couple summers ago, when we were writing The Idiot's Guide to RV Vacations, we were writing that book, we were blogging for 5 companies, and we were doing our podcast. And the travel was thrown out of whack. I mean, I look back fondly on that trip, but we were working too much while traveling.
Oh, yeah. We didn't get to enjoy just in that pure way our travels like we want to. And this summer, we will be. Like, when we're traveling, that is all we're going to be doing. We're not going to have deadlines that we're meeting and everything on the road. So that's been an important part of us achieving, you know, quote-unquote balance. But who knows if any of us ever achieve a balance. So, all right. Shay wants to know, is there anything about your trips that you don't share? Not personal stuff, but aspects that you keep exclusively for your own personal family memories?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And somebody in an iTunes review recently wrote something like, oh, after the first few episodes, they stopped talking about their kids so much and they're covering the whole RV and camping industries. And I don't have kids, so I like the podcast even more. And we have gone on this journey a little bit where we've moved away from it being about our kids and our family to it being about these twin industries that we love so much. So, and as we've gone on that journey, I mean, more of the experiences and memories have become private. We're not sharing every single funny thing that happens with our kids on the podcast.
Well, also, we're not sharing all of our travel content because what we've been able to do is focus more on our larger trips that are like a little bit bigger, a little bit more planned out. And then we have our correspondents to review campgrounds. So basically what this has done is it's freed up like our weekend camping.
Let them do the work, for goodness sake.
Well, we don't look for campgrounds to review like on the weekends and stuff. Like we don't do that. So we can go and we can enjoy a family camping weekend without feeling like it needs to be content.
Yeah, every weekend of camping is not a content weekend anymore.
Yeah, right. And that's really...
And also we're doing industry interviews and things like that. So there's not that pressure that every weekend we're going somewhere to.
All right. So Laura wants to know, how did you move from blogging to writing your books and freelance writing gigs? And why did you change your blog name early on?
Changing the blog name was... I mean, it was a little bit difficult, but it was really the right decision. So, I mean, for me, we used to be the Lively Little Campers, and we realized at a certain point that we wanted to cover the RV industry, the camping industry, and also that our kids wouldn't be little forever. Yeah. And that Stephanie and I wanted to keep writing about this for years to come. So we wanted to become more general interest and less about that look how fun and adventurous my little family is kind of blog. And it was a great move for us on our part. And it really, honestly, it kind of took off from there in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think it was a good decision.
And it was tied in with starting the podcast,
right,
changing the name.
It helped us clarify what kind of content we were actually covering.
There was a few awkward episodes where we were it was the RV Family Travel Atlas podcast by the Lively Little Campers. And that's just like too much of a mouthful.
Yeah. So and then, of course, we've said in the past, like, so we moved from blogging. We had a lot of content on our blog and a lot of people reached out to us. In fact, our editor from Penguin Random House got in touch with us to write the book. We did not reach out. And we really feel like that's the biggest piece of advice we can give anybody that wants to be a writer is have a great audition out there.
Build
people
a body
that are
of work. Yeah. And people do look for you. I mean, whatever the industry is or camping, RVing, travel, people are constantly on the lookout for good blogs, you know. And most of the people that we write for have approached us and they were either listening to our podcast or reading our blog, or a big one was following us on Instagram, and then they find their way to the blog. In a few cases, we definitely honed a really good pitch and we approached companies and went from there. But more often than not, we would get these shocking emails out of nowhere from Progressive or from Good Sam or from Penguin Random House. Yeah. But it was because we had been generating good work. And, you know, you think nobody's looking, but people are looking.
Yeah. So then our last question is from Carrie. And she wants to know, did you start your blog with the intention of growing it into a business? Or were you mostly planning on having a personal blog? And how much do you worry about your children's privacy?
Well, we definitely did not start the blog with the intention of it becoming a monetizable business. We really started it because we both love to write and we love to travel and we just thought it'd be fun. And I wanted to read Stephanie's posts and she wanted to read my posts. And it was just kind of a big, fun adventure for us. In retrospect, I'm really thankful that we didn't start it with the intention of turning it into a business because we got good at it. And then we got good at it. And then when we tried to turn it into a business, there was something there to work with.
Yeah. And, you know, about the privacy angle, we do care deeply about our children's privacy. And one of the best things that we've done, and we started actually years ago, I think probably about 3 years ago was the first time we had a sit down about it, like a really clear sit down where we developed policies about what we share, what we don't share, you know, really regarding our kids. So to me, the names were immaterial. Like some people say, oh, well, they don't use their names, the kids' names. To me, the kids' names, whatever. You could do an internet search of any kid. You know, it's just like they're out there. They're in the newspaper.
If you know the parents' name, you can know the
kids' if you're going to know our names, then you can find our kids' names. It's not really important anyway. You know, if you're an author – your kids' names are going to be out there. But what is important to me is that they own their stories. We own ours as parents, and we can talk about our stories, but our kids own their stories. I'm not going to take them from them. I'm not going to tell their stories to everybody. And I've said it before, my policy is that my kids can listen to an episode of RVFTA and not be embarrassed.
And, you know, in the rare case, I don't know if that's ever happened.
I don't think
so. Yeah, it hasn't. And if it did, I think we would correct course.
Remember, we used to say at the beginning, our three
little boys
and
they said, don't
boys.
Call us little boys. And we changed it.
Yeah, they said, oh, why do you say we're little? We go, okay, you're right.
And look, for another inside scoop on this thing, you know, our kids have kind of come to really enjoy this too. I think they're excited by the fact that we write about what we're doing and we take pictures about what we're doing and that we work with all these awesome companies. It's been an exciting ride for them. And look, they want to be park rangers, you know, and they might want to work in the travel and outdoor industry.
And they also, we were out at dinner one night recently and they were like asking me to ask them RV trivia. Like they wanted to, and you know, it would be like they were.
It's exciting for them. And if it did ever become annoying to them, you know, we would have to adjust and recalibrate.
And it would just be our content, you know, and that's fine. That would be easy to do because we don't actually talk about them that much, even though that they're the light of our lives.
Well, we hope that was useful. Because we always try to be useful here at RVFTA.
Useful, not fabulous.
And we can certainly carry on this conversation on our Facebook group.
Absolutely. If you have any other questions that we didn't answer or just even technical questions, we're happy to help you over on the Facebook group. We think that it's really just a fun way to enjoy, relive, process RV travel.
And maybe in 3 or 4 years, we'll do an episode on podcasting.
Yeah, exactly.
Or
3 years from now.
Maybe not. We will see you at the campground.
See you at the campground.